This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be discussing the top stories in state and national politics this hour with two guests from different political perspectives. We'll get their takes on top stories like Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius resigning following the rocky rollout of the Affordable Care Act. More Wisconsin state representatives have announced that they will not run for re-election. Governor Walker plans to formally launch his campaign for governor next week, following a new poll showing him with a double-digit lead in the race at this time. And Republican Senator Mike Ellis of Neenah is facing some rocky press after being recorded on videotape plotting an illegal campaign financing move. What news story of the week do you want to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us today Michelle Litchens, former Republican state representative from Oshkosh and a small business owner. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
And Tony Palmieri also joins us, a professor of communications at UW Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
All right. Well, let's see. First, Michelle, what do you make of Kathleen Sebelius resigning from the Obama administration?
Well, I think it should have happened some time ago with all of the problems that Obamacare and the rollout has had since last year. It's about time somebody is actually held a bit accountable. Granted, they said that she wasn't pushed out, that she chose to resign. I think that says a lot about Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act and where it's going to go from here. They had, you know, so-called 7.1 million people signed up, but only 30% of those individuals didn't have health insurance before they signed up. I think it has a long way to go to win the hearts and minds of Americans because they don't believe it's going in the right direction. So, I just think that this should have happened a long time ago with Kathleen Sebelius.
Tony, what's your reaction to Sebelius stepping down?
I think Sebelius has really gotten a bad rap from day one of this. I mean, the administration is trying a major overhaul of the insurance industry. It's not going to happen easily. I think the legitimate criticism of her and President Obama is that they took the single-payer option off the table from the beginning, and they went with this market reform instead. But let's compare it to the Republican and Health and Human Services Secretary, then-Secretary Tommy Thompson, their reform of Medicare Part D back in the early 2000s. That had a very slow rollout, website problems. It took well over a year for people to get adjusted to it. The difference is the Democrats tried to work with Tommy to get Medicare Part D off the ground and running. With Sebelius, she's had absolutely no cooperation at all from the other side. In fact, they've actively worked to undermine the program. So is it time for her to go? I mean, probably. I mean, it's clearly that she can't make any progress with the Republican Congress. But I think that history will be kinder to Kathleen Sebelius than we're seeming to think right now.
Yeah, Kathleen Sebelius said that she hoped but did not expect that her departure would represent the beginning of a more cooperative period in Washington to make health care better. If I could take something along with me, she said, it would be all the animosity. Tony, do you expect Republicans and Democrats to start cooperating now on health care?
Not until the Republicans come to the realization that Obamacare is not going away. It's going to be here. And it looks like they're not going in that direction. The Ryan budget is calling for repeal of it, which I guess means he wants people to once again be denied health care because of pre-existing conditions and things of that nature. So they really do need to start working together on this. I would like to see a single-payer system. That's where I would like to see us move. There's not support in that for the federal Congress, in the Congress right now. So, there's a hope that they'll start working together on this, but I don't expect it. I expect more hostility, at least in the short term.
And, Michelle, what do you say to that?
Well, I would really rather not go down the road of a single-payer system. And when you talk about working together, again, when you have two very diverse opinions about where health care should go in this country, I don't think people today would change the idea of, or they want to make sure that individuals who have pre-existing conditions do have access to health insurance. So I think there are a few reforms that have been discussed recently that we would be more than happy to keep and try to work with and make sure that it's affordable for folks. But I don't think going as far as the Affordable Care Act went was what most Americans wanted. You know, when all of us start to experience the full effects of our insurance plans changing, my doctor's changing, a lot of people are very, very unhappy about that. So when you talk about the administration working with the Republicans in Washington, when you both want to go in different directions, it is very difficult to say, well, let's try to find the middle ground, because either side wants to go in the other direction. So I don't see that happening until after the election this fall. And then if the Republicans take over the Senate, then we're going to have to talk about pushing back on Obamacare.
Yeah. So, Tony, if Republicans have a much different vision than the Affordable Care Act, what's wrong with trying to change it?
The vision seems to be repeal Obamacare. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the Republican vision for health care? Apparently it's to go back to the old way, denying people coverage based on pre-existing conditions, not allowing young people to stay on their parents' health insurance until a certain age, and various other reforms of the health insurance industry. You know, look, I'm not the biggest fan of the Affordable Care Act. As I've said several times, I think it would have made a lot more sense just to expand our Medicare program to everybody. Obama and Sebelius did not want that in the debate, did not fight for that. So we have the program that we do. By analogy, the Democrats helped to make Medicare Part D a better program. The Republicans should try and help to make the Affordable Care Act a better program. Michelle seemed to suggest that Republicans support not allowing insurance companies to deny people based on pre-existing conditions. Well, you know, if they want to see that happen, that can't happen by itself. There have to be other reforms of insurance. I mean, so they will have to work with Democrats to do that, but so far we're not seeing that.
Actually, Tony, they have those bills right now in Congress, and they would be willing to move forward on those.
All we are seeing, Michelle, in the Congress, we've seen it since 2010, are bills that would repeal the Affordable Care Act. That's the Republican mantra. And until they get away from that and say, we realize the Affordable Care Act is here, here are some ideas to improve it, then I think that progress can be made. And we're just not seeing this current Republican Party in that mode. You know, it's really, Joy and Michelle, I mean, it's really up to the voters in the November elections to make their voice known. I mean, are they going to keep in power a party that just keeps saying no to this and has not proposed any viable alternative to it? I mean, we'll soon see.
President Obama is expected to announce Budget Director Sylvia Matthews Burwell will be named as Sebelius's replacement. Do you expect any problems with that, Michelle?
Well, I mean, the Senate did approve her for a different position previously, so I think they would have a hard time saying no to her. But I do think that the whole approval process is going to give them another opportunity to, you know, kick the can when it comes to, or kick the cat when it comes to talking about Obamacare and the problems that it's had, and really the changes that do need to be made that the president is unwilling to make. The only changes he's willing to make are his own, but he's not willing to go through Congress to make any changes. So, but I don't really see that there's going to be a problem with her appointment.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
Yeah, I don't know much about this this nominee. She's supposedly got good managerial skills. I mean, we'll see. But it will provide an opportunity for the United States Senate to demonstrate whether it wants to cooperate in moving the Affordable Care Act forward. I mean, my guess would be we're going to see a fairly contentious confirmation process. But I hope I'm wrong on that.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Tony Palmieri, professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, and Michelle Litchens, a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh. about the top state and national news stories of the week during this edition of the Week in Review. If you have an issue from the news this week that you would like to put on the table, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. There will be more about Sebelius' resignation coming up on Point after 9 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today to Michelle Litchens and Tony Palmieri about the top news in state and national politics. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, let's talk about Republican Senator Mike Ellis of Neenah, who is in the news this week after being recorded on videotape plotting some sort of campaign finance move that is actually illegal. He claims that he wasn't going to launch into this PAC campaign financing situation when he learned it was illegal, and he admits that he looks terrible in this videotape. But is that all there is to it now, Michelle Litchens?
I think so. I mean, everyone who's familiar with Mike Ellis knows that he has a big mouth and he likes to run it, especially late in the evening. He didn't set up anything that's illegal. He might have talked about it, but I don't even think he knows what a super PAC is, quite honestly, because you can't do that in the state of Wisconsin if you're an elected official. He's been there. I mean, he was first elected in 1970, and campaigns have changed a lot since 1970. So, and you'd think he might have learned his lesson when someone had taped him at the Inn on the Park, you know, when he was talking about school choice in the Green Bay schools. Obviously not. So this was not a smart move on his part, but he certainly didn't do anything illegal, and I don't even think he had the intention to.
Yeah, this was a videotape that was made, an undercover videotape made by I believe it's a conservative group. And in it, Mike Ellis was discussing a plan to raise money by himself for a super PAC. He said that he would raise the money and then this super PAC would attack his Democratic opponent, who is State Representative Penny Bernard Schaefer from Appleton. What's your reaction to this, Tony?
Well, I think it's disturbing on a couple of different levels. First of all, I disagree with Michelle. I mean, the idea that Senator Ellis doesn't know what a super PAC is, and he's been the number one Senate leader on campaign finance reform issues for many years, he knows full well what a super PAC is, and he knew what he was proposing here. So I think it's disingenuous for him to say he didn't know that what he was proposing was, you know, potentially a law-breaking maneuver. And I think it's unfortunate. Penny Bernard Schaefer, his Democratic opponent, is really a great candidate. I think very much in tune with the 19th Senate District. And I think she made a really great statement about this, which is this is an example of the negativity in politics. I mean, why do we have to recruit outside groups to attack opponents in races? I think she made a great point. This is part of the problem. But a big story here that I think the Wisconsin press hasn't caught up with yet is that this seems to be part of the Republican infighting going on. I mean, Senator Ellis has been perceived by Republicans as a maverick. The modern Republican Party doesn't appreciate having mavericks in their ranks. I mean, Ellis has offended them historically, ironically, by supporting campaign finance reform, the very thing he was showing contempt for in this video. But also on the voucher issue, I mean, Ellis was outspoken. He didn't believe that the voucher program should be expanded statewide. And you know, at some point we have to ask ourselves, who put this group up to coming to Wisconsin to secretly tape a senator from the 19th Senate District of Wisconsin? I mean, why would they choose Senator Mike Ellis out of all the things that they're involved in across the country? And it, you know, Scott Jensen, the former assembly leader, I mean, there already was some accusation made that maybe his group that supports expanding vouchers was behind this. I believe that former Speaker Jensen has denied that. But I'm hoping that before long we find out who did put this group up to this. And it would not surprise me at all if we see now a Republican candidate step forward to the right of Mike Ellis to challenge him in the Senate district. And it probably will be someone who supports expanding vouchers statewide. I mean, we'll hopefully find out in the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, is that what's going to happen, Michelle?
We'll have to see. I know that my phone's been ringing. People were not impressed with watching that video of Senator Mike Ellis. And many people have said he's been there a long time and perhaps it's time for him to go. It's interesting that Tony brings up how some conservatives are upset with Senator Ellis, but yet, you know, the Democrats last year, Chris Larson, took out every Democrat that supports school vouchers. So I think you see both party kind of moving out further to their base instead of toward the middle, and that's on both sides. But I know that we have so many, or not so many, but quite a few candidates that are looking at running for Dean Crawford's seat. You know, people are motivated to get involved all over the state this year, and so it wouldn't surprise me to see a couple people stand up now that video came out and said, you know what, I think Mike Ellis needs a primary challenge.
So would you, Michelle, run against Mike Ellis?
Oh, No, my daughter has already made me promise that that I'm not running until she's out of high school.
Well, I had to ask.
That's all right.
But does this mean, Michelle, that you can't be a moderate Republican and serve in the Wisconsin legislature?
Well, I think the same thing goes for Democrats. I think it depends on your district, but it also depends on who turns out for your primary voters. If your primary voters are the ones who are going to choose your candidates, you know how you run to each end. That's, like I said, the same on the Democrat side. You can certainly be, you can represent your district. I live in Senator Ellis's district. I was in the legislature and I received hundreds of contacts from constituents saying that they support school vouchers. When he was fighting the expanding vouchers in the state, I heard from my neighbors on a regular basis how disappointed they were with Senator Ellis for not moving that issue forward. So I don't think that necessarily means you can't be a moderate, but I do think it means you do have to represent your district, and I do think that's an issue that this district supports.
Hmm. So what names are you hearing, Michelle, of Republicans who might challenge Mike Ellis in a primary?
I don't know exactly. I've had a few phone calls, but I've asked if I can use names, and they didn't say yes. So, but there are quite a few people that are looking to run, not only for the Senate, but for the State Assembly. And now if they see that maybe Senator Ellis might reconsider running, who knows? Maybe, having been there for 40 years, maybe he's just done with this. You know, politics has changed, and maybe he's starting to realize that, and maybe he will choose not to run. I have no idea. I haven't talked to him, so I'm just saying that might be a possibility out there. And then there are many capable, smart people in the Fox Valley that I am sure would jump at the chance at running for the Senate.
Who do you think is going to run, Tony?
I have no idea, but this, I just find this incredible. I mean, here you have a guy like Mike Ellis who's really gone along with about 98% of the Walker agenda. And he dares to step out independently on vouchers, which I disagree with Michelle on this, vehemently. I don't believe that there's lots of support for expanding vouchers statewide, especially when people understand what they really do. So just staking out any kind of independent ground in today's Republican Party is enough to run primaries against them and try to get them out of there. I actually think that Penny Bernard Schaber would benefit from running against someone who's further to the right of Senator Ellis. So if the Republicans do go down that road, I do think that it benefits Penny.
Yeah. Ellis was also in another videotape that was released yesterday, In it, he claimed to have more power in the Senate than Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, and he also said that Governor Walker's presidential ambitions Walker is working for Walker. So I don't suppose that goes over too well either, Michelle.
I don't think he made any friends by making that statement. But again, I go back to my first statement about Mike Ellis. He likes to run his mouth. And this is what happens when you run your mouth in a bar after he's likely been drinking. Now, the Senate president has a lot of power. He sets the calendar. So you do have to go through him to make sure you're going to get your bill up for a vote. So that does mean that that you have some control in the Senate. To say that he has more power than Senator Fitzgerald, I might argue with or disagree with that. But he did, this is typical Mike Ellis. You can find him doing this on a regular basis when he's down in Madison. So, and again, that goes to my point about how campaigns have changed, and maybe he is not up for another run in today's campaign environment.
Let me bring in a Cliff from Appleton who wants to talk about this. Hi, Cliff.
Good morning. I think one thing that's admirable about Mike Ellis is he says what he thinks, but I think his comments were ugly about raising all this money to attack. And Penny Bernard Shaver was quite gracious in how she responded. She said people should talk about what they're for and not just talk about attack, and she did not show a vindictive spirit. When Ellis said Walker's out for Walker, that's one of the few things I agreed with in that tape, because that's what I feel as a Wisconsin citizen. But as for raising money for attack, I found it quite ugly, quite disturbing. And I hope people react to that, because Penny Bernard Shaver is gracious. She connects with people. She's not a bully. She's appropriate in how she speaks.
Yeah, thanks, Cliff. Tony, you want to react?
Well, I agree completely with Cliff. I think that Penny is taking the high road here. And, when Ellis says Walker is for Walker, I suspect that if we were to talk privately with almost every member of the legislature, they would agree with that. This is a governor who, before he even announces officially for reelection, is in Las Vegas currying favor with Sheldon Adelson, a billionaire. Yes, indeed, Walker is for Walker. And, I do think the Mary Burr campaign needs to try and get that message out while they try and, promote their own positive agenda to move the state forward. So I think that Cliff is on track.
Michelle.
I think Walker is certainly also for the state of Wisconsin, and I don't think any of us could disagree that he wants to see Wisconsin moving forward. I think Penny did the right thing politically with what she said about Mike Ellis's comments. Mike is who he is. He said what he said, and now it's out there, and now the voters are going to have an opportunity to make a choice.
I'm Joy Cardine with Michelle Litchens, a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh, and Tony Palmieri, a professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, talking with them about the top stories in state and national politics during this edition of the Week in Review. We're going to move on to some other issues, and we welcome your input or the issues you would like discussed during this hour. What happened in the news this week that mattered most to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We just brought it up. Governor Walker will officially launch his campaign for governor on Tuesday, and this week, the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College Survey Center poll came out, and it showed Governor Walker with a double-digit lead at this point over his Democratic challenger, Mary Burke. Let me get you first, Michelle, to respond to the race as it is today.
I do think that the majority of people in Wisconsin like where Wisconsin is today, and they want to see it moving in the same direction. Very few people want to go back to where we were 4 years ago in the state. Employment is growing. We've increased employment by over 100,000 jobs in our state. 95-96% of employers think Wisconsin is going in the right direction. So I think voters see that. They see family members are finding jobs, and they want to head in that same direction. I think they don't know who Mary Burke is, but at the same time, if people were angry, if the majority of people were angry with Scott Walker, they would vote against him anyway. It doesn't matter who would be running against him. So I think that that says that for the most part, the majority, now that's not everybody. Wisconsin is still, split almost right down the middle. You will always have 45% of the state that doesn't like where the other part of the state is headed. But I think that Mary Burke has a steep hill to climb, to introduce herself to voters and then convince them that we shouldn't keep going in the direction that we're going.
Does Mary Burke have a steep hill to climb, Tony?
Well, sure she does. I mean, any challenger would. I mean, I do think that the Democrats made a mistake by not encouraging a primary election, which would really keep her name in the news and really force her to be really all over the state more than she is now. But having said that, I think there are some things in the poll, Joy, that the Burke camp can be maybe enthusiastic about. Number one, this poll that had Governor Walker up by double digits also, I believe, had 75% of the people saying they support raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your listeners need to know, those people who are going to vote for Scott Walker, they're not getting a raise in the minimum wage if we bring Scott Walker back to the governor's office. So I think this is saying to the Burke campaign, they really need to focus on economic issues, income inequality, job creation. There's no way the governor is going to reach his 250,000 job pledge from 2010. So the other thing in that poll, and if I were the Burke campaign, this would be the one part of the poll that would worry me at this point, is that she was also quite far behind among independent voters. I mean, we know she's going to get 98% of the Democrats, right? We know that she's going to have trouble breaking into many of the declared Republican voters. But if she's going to win in November, she really needs to win the independent voters. And that's the group that I think with a good positive message on the economy, she can make those inroads. And I think does have a shot to win in November.
Governor Walker said this week that he would like to finish his coursework to earn a college degree through the UW's new Flex program, but he said he won't pursue that until it offers courses that fits the areas that he studied, like political science. He did dodge questions as to whether he needed a college degree to be president. If Governor Walker wants to run for president in 2016, Tony, does he need to get a college degree?
Well, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln did not have college degrees, but I'd say Walker is not a Washington or a Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Among modern presidents, Harry Truman did not have a college degree. I don't think Walker is a Truman either. No, I don't think a college degree is a prerequisite for being president of the United States. It's not a constitutional requirement. But I will say, we'd love to have the governor in the UW working on the Flex degree program to help him get his degree.
Michelle, your thoughts on the governor saying that he might go through that UW Flex program to get his degree?
Yeah, well, I am excited about the Flex program, and I'm excited whenever someone makes the decision that they want to go back to school and further their education. Wisconsin actually only has about 26% of their the population has a bachelor's degree or higher. So I really think that when folks start talking about requiring a bachelor's degree to become president or something, that's a pretty darn elitist statement to say, because I think that you can find successful people, smart people, wise people all over the country who have never finished their college degree. So does one require a college degree to become president or governor or even state representative? I don't think so at all. In fact, I would prefer life experiences and wisdom to a piece of paper any day. But, the idea of having the governor go back to school to further his education, I mean, I'd support that in a heartbeat. And, again, I'm really excited that the UW system has come up with that flex program.
Republican State Representative Don Pridemore announced this week that he is retiring from the State Assembly. He is the 12th Republican and the 18th Assembly member overall to decide against seeking re-election. All 99 seats are up for election this November. How do you read this turnover, Tony?
Well, you know, I think one of the problems is that when these representatives do step away, the districts have become so gerrymandered that it's not clear that they're going to be very competitive races to replace some of these folks. And, I think for many members of the legislature these days, the legislature is not, for lack of a better word, as much fun as it was years ago. I mean, Wisconsin once was a place where you had lots of, I've used the word before on this program, maverick legislators, people who did not toe a party line, people who represented their district, which if it meant voting conservatively on some issues, they did. If it meant voting more liberal on some issues, they did that. They acted on their conscience. And Wisconsin, I mean, I think thanks to the gerrymandering and big money and things of that nature, we seem to have eliminated the maverick legislator. A lot of these guys go and vote party line. And it also seems that unless you're the governor, the speaker of the assembly, the majority leader of the Senate, or the chair of the Joint Finance Committee, there really isn't a lot of power in the other seats anymore. I mean, Michelle can probably speak to this better than I can as a former member of the legislature. I just think that we need to somehow restore that Wisconsin maverick spirit, the kind of Bill Proxmeyer spirit, someone that you can't predict well in advance where they're going to stand on every issue. You know, I think at one time Mike Ellis was that kind of candidate, and you could see the Republicans trying to remove that type of person from the legislature now, and I think it's unfortunate.
So why are so many state representatives fleeing the assembly, Michelle?
Really, this is no different than it has been in the past. In 2005, there were actually 18 seats that turned over. There were 25 freshmen this last year. I was part of a class of 30 freshmen. In 1999, there were 21 freshmen. So I don't think this is really anything that's much different than it has always been. We've always had a lot of turnover in the state, which, again, if you're talking about a citizen legislature, that's a great thing. When you're talking about working on or having power and the ability to make changes, you know, 94% and almost 95% of the bills that they voted on in Madison were bipartisan. There was bipartisan work on the mental health reform that happened, which I thought was imperative, and it was great for Wisconsinites. So I do think people have opportunities to really make a difference. You know, when Tony was talking about not having mavericks anymore, let's remember on the Democrat side, Chris Larson took out every Democrat that supported school vouchers and a Democrat that was pro-life. So you're seeing, and polls are showing us today that people, individual voters, are far more partisan than they've ever been. You know, your voters are watching MSNBC or they're watching Fox News, and neither the two shall watch each other's. So I think what we're seeing with our elected officials is indicative of what our voters believe and what they want to see. They're the ones making the choices of who they're sending to Madison and to Washington, D.C., and I wish our society was maybe not heading down that path, but unfortunately, I think that's where we're heading today, and I just think our representatives are a product of their voters.
We need to take a short pause. Our Week in Review will continue in just a moment. Also coming up, our Week in Review quiz question. Talking this week with Michelle Litchens, former Republican state representative from Oshkosh and a small business owner, and Tony Palmieri, a professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for our Week in Review quiz question. In free trade talks with the United States, the European Union wants names like feta and parmesan reserved only for cheeses made in Europe. And that's not sitting well with Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin, who said that would harm state businesses. Now the EU is making two other culinary demands that are rubbing Baldwin and many others the wrong way. Which Wisconsin products is Baldwin saying are now under attack by the European Union? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So besides cheese, what two other Wisconsin culinary gems would have to change their names because of these European Union trade talks? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will announce the winner and the answer at the end of the program, and we'll talk about that issue a little bit with our guests at the end of our Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Tony Palmieri and Michelle Litchens, and we also will be welcoming your input as we go along. Let's talk a little bit. Michelle, just before our break, was talking a little bit about school choice. As students attending private schools in Wisconsin using taxpayer-subsidized vouchers did not score as well as their public school counterparts in reading or in math. Test results released Tuesday by the State Department of Public Instruction show that voucher students in the Milwaukee and Racine and statewide programs all scored lower than public school students. Tony, are you surprised by this?
No, I'm not surprised by this. And, you know, really the issue for voucher schools for a long time has been whether the state should be using taxpayer money to support essentially two school systems. I mean, we have a public school system which is supported by taxpayer dollars. Why should taxpayer dollars be supporting another school system, especially when we find out that the test scores and other educational indicators are not as high? My parents sent my brothers and I to Catholic schools back in the 1960s and 70s. They did not receive any taxpayer assistance to do that. And that, to me, is the way it should be. If parents want to send their children to private schools, they are free to do that and to find a way to finance it. But taxpayers support public schools, and it doesn't seem fair to ask taxpayers to support a dual level of school system in the state.
Mm-hmm. Michelle.
Sure. Well, the taxpayers are not asked to support a school. The taxpayers are asked to provide an education to students. And so Wisconsin has the worst achievement gap in the country between black and white students. The worst problem in the whole country. And what are we doing to address that? So this study actually is not completely accurate. It was provided by WKCE, but it doesn't address the fact that to receive a voucher in the state of Wisconsin, it is based on your family's income. You need to be poor. And so those individuals, first of all, it was only expanded this year. So you're taking lower-income kids who are struggling in a public school and giving them the voucher and hopefully putting them in an environment where their parents have, you know, found this other school and they think this child is going to have a better opportunity to learn. But, again, we're talking about low-income students in the state, and I don't think it's fair to assess all students and compare them when we're specifically talking about low-income students. But I do think if we want to talk about educating our students as to the best of our ability, it shouldn't matter if that is at a homeschool, a charter school, a private school, or a public school. We need to close this achievement gap, and we need to make sure that every student in the state of Wisconsin has a good education.
Assembly Democrats are demanding Governor Walker call a special session to resurrect dead bills that they say would help the middle class. They include raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, creating a task force on clean energy jobs, imposing accountability measures on private voucher schools. Did Republicans neglect those measures, Michelle?
I don't think so at all. I don't think that we need to subsidize green energy more than we have in the past. And I think when you look at Republicans, Republicans don't believe that the government, and actually I don't believe, or anyone should believe, that the government can create jobs at all. I think the Walker administration and the Republicans in the Assembly and the Senate have done a very good job moving our state in the right direction. Like I said, we have created over 100,000 jobs in the last 2 years. 95% of employers think that we're going in the right direction. Coming back into session and spending more government money and creating more government programs isn't going to grow jobs in the state of Wisconsin. So I think that we are headed in the right direction, and we just need to continue in that direction.
Tony.
I didn't hear anything that you said in that description, Joy, is talking about creating more government programs. The number one issue that the Dems want the special session for is the minimum wage. And a wide majority of people in this state support raising the minimum wage. The majority supports raising it to $10.10, but even those who don't want it to be raised that high want some raise in it. So the Republican Party and the governor are completely out of touch with the public on this. Another issue they want in a special session that I think you did not mention, Joy, is the Medicaid expansion. I mean, this really is a travesty. I mean, under the Affordable Care Act, if we expand Medicaid, it'll be paid for completely for the first 3 years and then covered 90% by the feds after that. So I agree with them. We do need a special session to air out these issues. Unfortunately, it looks like the only special session issue our governor and the legislature want is potentially one about voter ID, one to possibly narrow voting for Wisconsinites. And that, I think that says a lot about the priorities of the current GOP in 2014.
Yeah, Governor Walker signed a boatload of bills into law this week, 62 of them on Tuesday alone, among them banning revenge porn, restricting drone use, allowing doctors to say I'm sorry without fear of legal liability. Anything in this bunch that that we should know about or know a little bit more about, Michelle?
I think they have done so much just this year that, you know, we need to talk about. Again, like I was mentioning before, the mental health reform they signed this spring, or the governor signed this spring, that is going to help so many individuals in our state who suffer from mental illness and their families who have been trying to get their loved ones, you know, help. Hopefully, and that was very bipartisan in its creation and passing, the oral chemo bill that just came up to make it more affordable for individuals to receive oral chemotherapy. And the CBD oil, hearing some of the stories from parents who have these children with seizures, I'm excited that the legislature was able to pass something like that. I wish they would have gone further with school accountability. You know, for the schools that do receive vouchers, it would have been nice to see that happen. Hopefully they can come back then again next year and they can push that further. But I think that they've been able to do a lot. They had the tax cuts this spring to send more money back to the taxpayers. So I think we should be pretty happy with what the legislature's been able to get done this year.
Yeah, do you have anything wrong, to say about those bills, Tony?
No, I would just say that in many ways this is a classic example of what's wrong with the current system. I mean, we're talking about 60 bills. The overwhelming majority of them did not get sufficient public hearings, at least that anybody was aware of. And most people have no idea what's in these bills. I mean, it speaks to what's wrong with our legislature now. I mean, lots of these bills get extensive discussion within the caucuses in closed sessions, and then minimal public debate, and then all of a sudden we get an announcement that our governor is signing 60 bills. I will say on the oral chemo bill, that's a classic example of the importance of the press in Wisconsin. We would not have gotten that legislation were it not for some heroic work by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that showed how lobbyists were ready to kill this bill. And thanks to that excellent reporting from that newspaper, it got enough public attention, and I think the Republican legislature was literally shamed into passing this, especially at the assembly level. So we need more of that kind of journalism to hold these legislators accountable.
Yeah, Tony, you mentioned voter ID a little bit ago, and as we're running short on time, in the news this week, Vice President Joe Biden criticized the state for limiting in-person absentee voting. He's going after Republicans, saying that Democrats should not let this stand. He says that this means hardworking Americans will have to take time off of work to be able to vote, that they won't be able to vote after church on Sunday. Is he right, Tony?
Of course, yeah. The vice president is completely right. I mean, the Pew Foundation recently ranked Wisconsin number 3 in its voting procedures. Only North Dakota and Minnesota are ahead of us. You would think we'd be proud of that and maybe try to attain the number 1 status. Instead, our politicians, mostly Republicans, are intent on moving us backward, and that's very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. A quick reaction, Michelle, as we're almost out of time.
Sure. I think it's awfully interesting that Joe Biden from the state of Delaware, where you cannot vote early at all, and you can only vote with an absentee ballot if you have a valid excuse. So it's interesting that he comes into Wisconsin and tells us that we're doing it wrong here.
Well, let's congratulate Betsy in Beaver Dam. She's the winner of our Week in Review quiz this week. She'll win a fabulous prize like a bottle opener with the Wisconsin Public Radio logo on it. We asked, besides cheese, which Wisconsin culinary gems is Senator Tammy Baldwin saying are under attack by the European Union? Turns out it's beer and brats. Europe wants beer names like Oktoberfest and meat monikers like Bratwurst to be used only on European-produced beer and sausages. So if the EU gets its way, you'll have to drink your Oktoberfest-like ale with your Bratwurst-style sausages. Baldwin has written multiple letters to U.S. trade negotiators saying America won't stand for this. More than 40 other senators have signed on, including Wisconsin Republican Ron Johnson. We have just a minute or so to go. Michelle, what's your reaction to this? Do you think this will actually come to be?
Oh, I don't at all. It's nice to see Tammy Baldwin doing something in the Senate, though.
Uh-oh.
But we probably have more German descendants in our country than they have in Germany. So I don't think this is going to go anywhere.
Tony, what do you think?
Well, we finally found something that Baldwin and Johnson can agree on. So this is some great bipartisan effort to make sure we can continue to call brats and beer by their proper Wisconsin names.
Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Tony Palmieri, professor of communications at UW Oshkosh, media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene, and Michelle Litchens, former Republican state representative and a small business owner in Oshkosh. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Robin Cherry for producing this program. Thank you for listening. Coming up on Monday, we have lots of interesting stuff in store for you. On Monday, on our State Capitol Report, we will be talking more about voucher schools versus public schools. We will talk with an education columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about those test results released by DPI this week. And we are also working on getting two of the outgoing Assembly state representatives to join us to talk about the state of Wisconsin politics today. So that and more coming up on our State Capitol Report on Monday between 7 and 8. We're also going to be talking about space and the upcoming lunar eclipse. We'll be talking about that on Monday after 6. So I hope you join us Monday on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Have a great weekend. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.